Let's talk about what's going on with schools and in-person learning. Is it happening in your district? What's going on, and are you happy with the plan your school district has proposed? 312-981-7200. That's how you reach us. Love to hear from you. We're talking earlier about how there are several school districts now that have just said, you know what, we just are not going to open for in-person learning. Palatine, Schaumburg, Arlington Heights, Deerfield, Evanston, Downers Grove, Oak Park, River Forest. On the list of those who have said, you know, we'll start remotely and take it from there. And some are just planning on doing a remote plan for the fall. There are different variations. Chicago Public Schools is saying we'll do a hybrid plan. They're still allowing for in-person learning. And things change all the time. They look at the health data. They look all kinds of things. But they are planning for some in-school learning. And so the question is it safe? Is that the better way to do it? What is the right way to do it? I know there's so many concerns, and we've heard from some of you already today about what's on your mind with this. You have so many different perspectives to weigh. Let's talk to the Illinois Federation of Teachers and the president, Dan Montgomery, nice enough to join us. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, Anna. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Better than you, I think, because I'm sure everything's coming at you, and everybody's got concerns, and I'm sure you have an earful. I have my sister's in education, and she's hearing it, and I know it's that you've got a lot of things to weigh as you figure out the plans. Where are you?
Yes, there's really a lot going on. Yeah, so we represent teachers all over the state, including Chicago, but all the way far downstate, north, west, and east, and We did a lot of talking to our teachers, our members, in school. Also, we represent people who aren't teachers but work in schools, paraprofessionals, teaching assistants, things like that. So kind of run the whole gamut, including higher ed. And in the end, we came down on the best thing right now is to start school remotely, to sort of make that declaration and then really use this time, the time that's remaining now, to work really hard to make sure remote instruction is as good as it can be. And I think it will be a lot better than it was in the spring. I still have one kid in high school, and believe me, I know how tough that was from the parent's point of view, as well as being an English teacher. So there's that. The other thing we've said is we really need school districts to work hard to do a much more robust job of getting child care in place for community members. So that's where we are. We think, if you look at balance, unfortunately, we did a great job, and Governor Pritzker and Dr. Ezekiel did a great job in the spring, really helped our numbers here in Illinois, but now we're seeing it tick up, right? Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, you can look at certain zip codes in this state, including in the city, and the rates are really high. I'm really concerned about the Metro East right now, down outside St. Louis, where the positivity rate, I think, is around 8. And, of course, there's some zip codes in the city where the rate is in 10, like 10 or something. So, we had Dr. Fauci on a call with
let me ask you about that, Dan. Are you surprised by him? He was making news today because he said the default position should be allowing schools to reopen for K through 12, not high school, I guess through sophomore year.
Mm-hmm. And he said the same thing to our members. He said, look, but you have to really listen to all the details of what he said. He said, yes, we want school back. And we agree with him. We do want to be back. My God, we want to be back so bad. It's our profession. It's what we do. It's our identities. We love teaching in school. So we all want to be back. But he then said, but you have to do it safely. And he said, you can't do it in places where you have the virus is out of control. And you can't do it if you don't have all the safeguards in place, meaning everybody's wearing a mask, you're able to distance the kids, et cetera, et cetera. Our assessment is, one, now out of control, well, we see the virus moving up. And, previously they were saying you want to get it to a positivity rate under 3. Well, geez, Illinois, I think overall is 4.8. But as I said, there are areas where it's much, much higher. So you have that. And then you have whether we really have all the PPE and cleaning and the space and room in buildings to keep kids safely apart from each other. And that is very, very difficult right now. And we don't see that. So I would say, a lot of the districts, the prevailing number of districts we've seen have kind of a remote plan. But even in the last week or so, I think the number now of our districts was 6 just in the last week where they said, They announced they were going to be hybrid, mixed, and said we're going full remote because they're seeing either community spread or it's just too challenging to keep the kids safe.
Chicago Public Schools, though, still has that hybrid schedule of the 2 days in-person instruction. And I know the teachers' union has been very outspoken. They had demonstrations yesterday outside City Hall saying that they don't believe, let me give you the quote, you can't convince anyone out here that this is safe. Stacey Davis Gates, the vice president of CTU, was out there saying, we're looking at this plan. We don't like it. We don't think it's safe. Can it be done?
Well, I would listen to what they're saying. I mean, they've been very thoughtful, and, you know, Chicago's a big city, right? And the school district itself is like the city. There's different schools with different contexts and things like that. As I mentioned, you can see there are zip codes in the city with positivity rates over 10. You know, that's no one, I think, could think that you could safely in a community open a school like that. So the other thing was there was a Kaiser poll of parents, I think it was last week. Nationally, something around 60% of parents, it's a pretty healthy margin, didn't want school back in person. But parents of color, black and brown parents, it was about 80% wanted to have remote learning. And why is that? Because we've seen how these communities of color have just been decimated during this virus. So, that's really, and we know, too, that, you know, Chicago is a majority-minority district, if you will, right? The majority of the students in CPS are black and brown. And we really need to help them in their communities. This is a devastation like nothing we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, that said, though, there hasn't been much equity in the e-learning so far. I mean, I know from just firsthand experience, the parents I know who have resources, they can afford tutors, they can afford other resources,
right.
They can buy these little pricey online classwork things, and I've read in the Wall Street Journal that these very, very wealthy parents are creating their own pods to, you know, I mean, I don't even understand the pod, but apparently they pay a group of teachers or tutors, and they have their own private school they set up, and this stuff is happening. It's very strange, but you don't have that option if you're, if you don't have the means and the resources to do that.
Well, that's so true. And that's why we need the federal government to come through to help the states level the playing field. Exactly. I mean, there's been a long time, you know, crisis in the country in terms of what people call the achievement gap, right? How the social and economic structures and the racial structures in the country disadvantage black kids, brown kids. And it's all been blown up and exacerbated by this virus. So, there has been progress made. The state, I think the last I heard was another $50 million to sort of close the digital divide, if you will, making sure there's broadband access everywhere, getting devices in the hands of kids. But we need to do more of that. I know the HEROES Act from Congress had a lot of money dedicated to that. It would be good if the Senate could pass that so we can get that money out to the states and into the hands of families. You're absolutely right. The wealthier you are, you may be able to do those things, and God bless you. But we just have too many kids in this country and in Illinois who don't have those resources. And it's up to us. It's up to, you know, the adults, our government, our citizens to come through on behalf of those children.
Steve, are you wanting to jump in here?
Yeah, I'm wondering, Dan, we hear this term safety strike, and the national unions both said yesterday that could happen. Do you anticipate that in the state of Illinois? And in the second question I have is, if it does, would it be district by district or maybe a region, or would it be more than just one school at a time?
Yeah, well, those are both really good questions. I'll take the first one first. Do I anticipate it? Well, I sure hope not. I mean, we're going to do everything to prevent that, everything we can. One of the challenges we have, quite honestly, is that there's very little enforcement power. The Illinois State Board of Education is saying, well, if you go into a district and no one's wearing a mask, and the teachers are going in there and the people who work in the school are saying, whoa, wait a minute, this isn't safe. The State Board of Ed has said, well, we can't enforce that. So we said, okay, well, who can enforce it? The County Health Department? No. So we can't put people, I mean, we don't put people all over in various settings in this country, in work settings or other settings where it's not safe, and then say, yeah, there's not much we can do about it. So we're working hard. We're exploring some legal options. I think we'll have an announcement on that soon in terms of the courts, to make sure that we can enforce safety for students and teachers.
How would that work? So you would go into court preemptively to somehow get the power to get assurances?
Yeah, I mean, we filed an amicus brief. You know, the governor has preemptively sued a school district and a couple of private schools downstate, and we filed a friend of the court brief on that because we have a deep interest in the outcome of that case. We'll use every means that we have, every lever we have, if there's a district that is really putting kids and adults in harm's way. And yes, we have said, and that would include a strike on behalf of health and safety if it came to that. Would it ever come to that? I really hope not. To your second question, how would it happen? I mean, Illinois has 852 school districts. So in most places, I think, you know, the management of the school district, the school boards, the superintendents are working with their unions pretty well. But we'll see when it comes down to it. I mean, the news like out of Georgia that we've seen this case, you know, they started back school, 260 kids sick, or that school in Indiana where the first day it was a junior high and there was a student with COVID. You know, if we bring kids back in the building, that's going to happen times, you know, 852 districts in Illinois, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't foresee a statewide action, but you never know. I mean, I think that we're going to see things play out on the ground district by district. And that's one reason we're saying, like, look, do this sort of sane, calm, reason thing. Take your time. Open schools remotely. Use this time to plan, making sure you can do remote instruction well. And then the other thing we've said is, and there's good science behind this, when you start bringing kids back, bring back the youngest kids first. And the kids who are most learning challenged, most, you know, heavy needs, and they need more adult help. And we think that also can help that transition when you start to bring people back in the building to be safer.
Dan, why do you say the youngest kids first?
Well, so there is some science that shows that kids under the age of 10 or 10 and under seem both to not get as sick, right, and not transmit the virus as much. Mm-hmm. And frankly, those are kids that parents can't leave alone more, right? So if you're working and, you know, you've got to leave the house and you've got a six-year-old, you know, we'd like to get those kids back in school as quickly as we can. And then, of course, obviously special needs kids. I mean, you know, there's kids who have a lot of needs that the schools address that a lot of people don't really think about or aren't aware of. You know, I taught in a high school that had, as many do now, like a medically fragile program, right? And you have students with feeding tubes and brain shunts, and you know, that's an environment where you need kind of like medical grade PPE. So those are the kinds of things that happen in schools every day that I think people maybe aren't appreciating.
Yeah, so many decisions to make. I mean, it's just we'll see what happens. There's not a lot of time to make it either if you are going to do the learning. So appreciate the time, Dan, and good luck with all the decisions ahead, and I hope you keep us posted.
Well, I will. Thank you so much for having me on. Talk soon.
You too. Dan Montgomery there, Illinois Federation of Teachers. Got thoughts about what you heard or what's going on in your school district? We'd love to hear your thoughts as well. 312-981-7200 here on WGN. Go to the phones, and Laura, you jump in here. What do you think about all this?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Uh-huh. So I'm going to preface this by saying I'm a physician. Working in ER, also taking care of patients in the hospital, have been around coronavirus patients since day one. Hmm. I have a child who's in high school, and then I have another child who's in college. A couple comments. One, I think we need to be leaders. I think we need to demonstrate that we can do this safely. We're doing it safely in the hospitals. We all work together. We work very close. The 6 feet is if you're not wearing masks. You put everybody in masks and hand sanitizers. These kids can follow directions. We're not talking about their mental health. They're depressed. They're playing increased video games. There's just really nothing to look forward to. Everything is being canceled systematically from them. I'm worried about the teachers. Of course there's a risk, but they're the same folks who are out there shopping. They're in grocery stores. Why are teachers somehow protected from being essential when you can go to the grocery store or the pharmacy? No one's talking about these kids' mental health. If we look at the hospitals, we figured out a way to do this safely. The only virus we've eradicated is smallpox. That took a couple hundred years. We're going to have to assume there's going to be a little bit of risk, but we have to move forward safely.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the American Academy of Pediatrics came out right away, and I heard several pediatricians interviewed at this time, and they said they'd send their kids back to school. They say that, you know, there's more to school than just academics. The academics, for sure, it's got to be figured out, because remote learning cannot be the same as it was in the spring and the fall. I don't know anyone who said that that worked well. But there's also the social and the emotional skills. There's the mental health support, and you're right, there's the sort of in-class learning. How do you figure it out? You know, how do you get people comfortable?
Well, if teachers weren't essential, then we can just put our kids in front of a computer for Khan Academy. Mm-hmm. So they are essential. We have to treat them as they're essential. And I understand the reticence. The first time you go back, you're going to be very nervous, but then you figure it out and you figure out how to do it safely. To cancel college when we can have small groups of learning it's silly, it's ridiculous, and our kids need to be back in the school. We need our leaders to actually figure a way out to make this happen safely.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for the thoughts.
Thanks
for taking time to call in. Okay, let's go to Patty. Patty, you're on WGN.
Hi. Yes. I just wanted to point out the gentleman you had on. It is all about common sense. And obviously we have people in the government who make decisions, and they aren't ever affected with the lower income or anything that has obstacles in front of them, but they make all the decisions for everybody, and they don't live it. But last night on World News, David Muir had a segment on a couple whose baby was born prematurely at 1 pound, and obviously in the NIC unit, everyone is doing fine now, but the NIC unit nurses had see-through facial masks, not the guards, but facial masks. And they said that they found through a study that when babies can see the smiles of the nurses and the parents, what a change in attitude and health. And these parents had these see-through masks on, and their baby could see their entire face. And you think, what is wrong with that, especially for kids who may have to read lips? Mm-hmm. You forget about the hearing impaired. And it's like, why isn't someone thinking about producing see-through masks that you can see faces and smiles and just move through? But it was an incredible segment on World News last night, and I'm sorry, I don't know what hospital it was, but it was an incredible eye-opener after how many months of covering everybody's faces up.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I heard about these a few months ago. We even talked about them on the show, that they existed, but you don't see them that much, and you think about how powerful that would be for a kid. They want to read your face and see, am I doing the right thing? Am I, you know, like, they want your feedback, and that seems like that we'd like to see a lot more of those out, especially in education for those schools that do go back. Are you on board with going back?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you on board with schools going back for in-class learning?
Well, I'm the mother of one child who's starting freshman year in college. So my college concern list from a year ago has changed dramatically to what it is today. And fortunately, she's going to a smaller college, and I am excited for her because they need a change. They're going to do it smart, and everyone has to rely on one another, and it is a huge trust factor with each other.
Sure.
You have people, you're not going to change their mind. They're not going to wear a mask. They're going to be insensitive. But for the most part, if everyone can get on board, but I am all for getting kids as safe as you possibly can. And they do listen. I believe wholeheartedly
that they will.
And the gentleman was right. You do it slowly and you start introducing them, but there's obviously means, like these face masks, that should be accessible to just help the process instead of hindering everything and constantly saying no to everything.
It's a great idea, Patty. Thank you. Thanks for the call. We're going to continue.
Thank you for your show. I appreciate it.
Talking about schools and should in-class learning be in place. A couple of schools, you saw a reverse course on that. School districts, I should say, just in recent days, in fact, saying, you know what, we're going to start remotely, all remotely. And some parents groups and individuals were not happy about that. They were hoping that something would be worked out for in-class learning. Do you hold off on in-class learning until there's a vaccine? Is that what you want? I mean, I'm trying to understand when it ends, or do you sort of try to get things underway? We heard Dan Montgomery of the Illinois Federation of Teachers talk about try to get these plans together for e-learning and then, you know, kind of figure it out as you go along when you might return to school. Jim, let's hear from you. Weigh in on this. What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
Hey. Good.
So I have a sophomore District 211 high school student, and we found out last night that they will be starting the year off e-learning. I don't necessarily know how I feel about that in particular. I do agree with the lady that called that discussed her work in the hospitals and how they're able to, you know, keep safe, and common sense goes a long way.
Yeah.
But District 211 gave us a litany of things that we, the parents, need to do in order to facilitate this e-learning, and I was a little disgusted with it because I sign my kid up for school, I send her to school, and they do their job. I mean, I'll check to make sure. She's a sophomore. She's a young adult. I trust that she's diligent, and it was almost like we have to do their job for them. And I already have a job. I get paid to do my job. They get paid very well to do their jobs. I think that they need to either step up to the plate, come into school and teach from, I don't know, Skype or however they do it, or have these kids come back and, do what we...
Jim, how does your student feel about it? Like, what are the thoughts there?
She's not happy. I mean, these kids, like the other lady just spoke about, they need their socialization. Like, everything is getting canceled. All the sports, all their activities, they can't do anything. They're becoming bums in the house. I mean, other than being able to be outside, but it's not right. And I'm sorry that our kids have to grow up in this environment. If we wait for a vaccine, I mean, we're still waiting on a cure for AIDS. How long is this going to take? I think we need to just kind of use common sense and attack it head on and send our kids back and use just decency, use your manners and everything else. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but
try to do it safely. I don't think anyone's wrong on this. I think it feels as if there's no perfect plan. And the other thing you wonder is those high school students that are not in class, what will they be doing? Will they be gathering in groups anyway? Because they need that socialization. And you wonder, how that contributes to the counter argument, right?
And they're doing it now. They are doing it now. There are kids that are getting together and hanging out, and they're wearing their masks and they're doing the right thing. I also have a rising sophomore in college, and he's really looking forward to going back and getting together with his teammates for the sport. He goes to that school to play, and he's a small school in Michigan, and it just they need to get back to normal, whatever the normal can be.
Something for them. I feel it too in my own family, the kids in my own family. Thank you. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Becky, let's hear from you. You may have a different viewpoint here. What's on your mind?
It's actually ludicrous to send these kids back to school. Remote learning is the way to go. I understand parents need to get back to work, but wait a minute. You brought these kids into this world. It is your primary responsibility to take care of your children, not send them off to school. School is secondary to work. You cannot have social gatherings of over 50 people. How can you consciously send your children off to school and put them at risk for contacting COVID-19?
Yeah, I think Jim was saying, I don't know if you heard the last caller, Jim. I don't think he was saying it was just about going back to work. He's saying he's feeling sort of that emotional sort of thing you hear from a lot of parents right now, that they're missing school, they're missing the social interaction, that that's part of growing up, that being in that environment of learning is important to them, and some more than others, I'll tell you. Some kids are like, I got my iPad, and I'm going to do my learning over here, and I'm fine, don't bother me. And then there are others, and I've noticed it in my own family, of kids who you notice that, like, this depression of not being in school, not being part of the sports they're part of. The whole thing is their structure in life and sort of their mental well-being is not doing well. We have to admit these things are true, too. Does that mean you're rushing?
Oh, they are. I don't deny that. But the thing is, how can you consciously send them back to school and put them at risk?
Yeah.
You can't have social gatherings over 50, yet you're going to send them into a school with 500, 800, 1,000, 2,000 kids. Before they go through the front door, they need to be tested for a fever every day. You cannot just drop them off at the curb. The parent stays with them. If they have a fever, they go right back home. They don't go through the doors. And I understand they need the social aspect of going to school. It teaches them social skills. It's not just an educational learning. They also learn social skills in school, interaction with other kids. I get all of that. But how can you put your kids at risk? These teachers, I stand with them and not wanting to go back. Mm-hmm. You don't know their living situation. They might have a elderly parent living with them with children of their own. they get exposed, they take that back to their house.
Yeah.
How can we do that?
Thank you, Becky. Thanks for your call. I know that they are have been surveying different teachers to ask if you have an underlying condition, if there's someone there who has one that you should opt out and should not be in the school. But, I mean, to your point, too, though, Becky, about big gatherings over 50, I know that's the reason why Stevenson High School decided we've got a huge school. We got so many kids that even in passing in the hallways, even if we do halftime, we've got too many kids here that wouldn't work. And maybe it's more of a case-by-case kind of situation.